Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny podcast. As you can tell from the music, today will be a John solo version. I tried talking my 12-year-old into joining me today, and he was having none of it. He was far too interested in playing some MLB The Show. And so I guess I'll just be kicking it by myself today. I got turned down by a 12-year-old boy. And so that's what you get today, everybody. You're going to get me and what we got left here, but... remember, you can follow the show at ScottyJohnny1 on Twitter. You can follow me at JBarn54. You can also follow Aaron, who's not with me. He's with some friends and who came up to visit him this weekend, so he's not going to be available this week. But he should be back next weekend. From the text messages I'm getting, it sounds like he's having a great time. But you can follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk, and I'll do it quicker than Aaron normally does. So... the other thing I want to mention here, as we're in the beginning, early stages of this, is we did launch the ScottyJohnny.com website. There's not a lot to it. It's mostly just an easier way to find the podcast, but we are going to be adding some written content to go along with things that we have up there. Just a couple quick stories here and there as we go through. If anybody's interested in adding content to that for us, you can reach us and talk to us about that. You can reach us now at podcast@ScottyJohnny.com. But with that all said, we'll get started right away and get right into the main event. Starting things off with the main event. Okay, so the little bit that we do have for the Packers this week is we do need to cover up that last week we talked about that there seemed like there might have been an issue. We talked about it with Jim Widener, that there might be an issue with the salary cap, right? And Jim was rightfully up in arms about it. He definitely has an issue with the Rust Ball thing. But it seems the Packers actually, in looking at it, if you followed me on Twitter, you saw some of this. What happens, it seems to be, is that there's an amount of money in the carryover that comes through that doesn't necessarily get tracked live through the players' union. Now, the NFLPA is where most of the reporters get their numbers from. But that's not the numbers that the Packers are using, nor what the NFL itself is tracking. So there might have been some missing money there, an $8 million or so difference between what was being looked at through the NFLPA site that the writers are using and the actual amount that the NFL is tracking. And the point that needs to be made, and Tom Silverstein made it very well at the end of some of his Twitter stuff, was they don't track it the same as what Russ Ball does. Russ Ball has the right numbers because he's tracking live in real time, whereas the reporters and the rest of us out here just kicking around are trying to follow it through a couple different sites that aren't necessarily always as up to date. So it looks like they have about $13 million left in cap space right now for the coming year. About $5 million of that will be reserved for rookies. So the Packers are in okay shape there that way. And remember, most of those free agent deals that the Packers just signed are actually roughly two-year deals with a couple years afterwards, but they can be cut with no real cap penalty after 2 years. That said, the couple people who did visit the Packers this week would include Eric Berry. Eric Berry was released by the Chiefs. Definitely he's another safety who could really be good help for the Packers. Having as many older people back there, I mean proven veterans, good veterans who can get back there and can teach, is going to be key because we've got some talented players back there, but they don't know what they're doing just yet. Josh Jones, as has been said several times by people like Ben Fennell, Andy Herman, friend of the podcast, Andy Herman has brought this up too. The closer to the line of scrimmage you can keep Josh Jones, the better. If you can keep him 8 yards away, you're doing great because he can run up, he can use his athleticism, he can react in real time more quickly. He's better off if he's doing quick reacting and just letting himself not think about the game. The further from the line of scrimmage he is, the more you're relying on him being just a coverage guy or staying back and deep and having to read and respond to a lot more things and having it slows everything down for him in terms of his thought process and makes it slower for him to get to the ball. So the more they can do to teach him and get him more instinctual and just knowing things so well on that offense, that defense that he can get to the ball, the better off they'll be. Having Eric Berry joining Adrian Amos back there would be insanely great, and it would be a great thing for Josh Jones in the long run. The other little bit of news that we have for the Packers is they will be starting off the NFL's 100th season, which is the Packers' 101st season, on the Thursday night opener. So that means that the traditional Super Bowl winner Thursday night game to start the season will not feature the Super Bowl winner. They will get, I think they get the Sunday night game, something like that. But the Thursday night opener is going to be Packers-Bears. And that is the perfect way to start an NFL season, the perfect way to start an historic NFL season, if you will. The 100th season in the NFL will be started with the oldest rivalry in football, or at least pro football, that is. So that's going to be exciting to watch. It's going to be great starting off and kicking it off in a historic way like that and having the NFL embrace its roots. And one thing it could do if you really wanted to embrace that is stop only counting Super Bowls when they're talking about their champions. They need to talk about the fact that they have a 13-time NFL champion against a 9-time NFL champion when they get into there and have that game going. But that's really all for Packers. We are going to be getting more into some draft coverage. We have a couple people we're thinking about bringing in to talk about some people they're keenly interested in. Aaron and I are going to start talking about some of those things coming forward. But for now, we're going to keep moving on and keep the pace of the show going. This is the shortest Packers segment that I've had in a long time. And it feels sad and it feels dirty. It feels lonely in that regard. But we're going to move on to Brewers. Brewers, by the time you hear me again next week, the Brewers will have started the regular season. Thursday the 28th, they will be starting against St. Louis. They will be playing a four-game series over the weekend. It will lead into April. So that will be the beginning of the baseball season. And I'll tell you, we're very ready for it here. It's going to be very exciting. We're very happy about the season and excited to see how this team can do. The thing that's so frustrating about baseball is it's such a long get-to. It's like when you like a dad, it's like a bad dad joke. You know, it goes on for 5-10 minutes and ends with a very lame punchline. My children know that I tell any number of those ones. It goes on forever, and you get emotionally involved. You get really into it, and you're following it day to day, and you're going on and on and on, and it goes on forever. And then you get in the playoffs, and then just very suddenly, it's just over. And it feels worse like that in baseball than it does in any other sport because the buildup takes so long. 162 games to get to a one-game playoff, to a wild card series, to the ALCS, NLCS, to, you know, it goes on and on, and it's so hurtful and sudden when it stops because it's been the only thing you've had for, you know, the season goes on forever. So it's hard to get started at the beginning of this because it's hard to get amped up knowing it's just going to be a long ride again. But I'm very excited to go see the Brewers again this year. The couple things we have, they're finishing up spring training. The most exciting part of this is that they're going to Montreal. They're in Montreal right now, and as I'm speaking, they've just finished up their game with the Blue Jays in Montreal. And one person who did not make the trip is Ryan Braun. And by now you've almost certainly heard about this, but Ryan Braun had to be left behind. I believe he flew into Milwaukee from spring training because he could not go to Canada because he forgot to bring his passport. So Ryan Braun is not joining the team. Ryan Braun will not be playing the two-game series against Toronto. That will be the amp-up series to get them set. We will be getting ready here, and it will be starting off against the Cardinals very shortly here after they get through just these last two games, the last little bit of tune-up, having a two-game series against the Blue Jays. Other big news, fan favorite Eric Kratz was traded this week, sent off to San Francisco for CJ Hinojosa. He's an infielder. We essentially traded a 24-year-old. We traded away a 38-year-old. That seems very much in line with the way that Stearns has been running this program, the way that he's had everything set up, trying to get younger and younger. You want to have players at 25. You don't want to pay players who are over 25, especially not much. You don't want to overpay for them because what they keep finding and looking through this is that that's really kind of that peak. And so once you've got somebody who's 25, you don't want to keep paying them for another 10 years because a 35-year-old player is not statistically, when you're just using the pure metrics of it, not statistically going to give you the sorts of things that you want if you're trying to build a long-term contender. So they trade away Eric Kratz. They get an infielder who used to be one of the top 13 prospects in San Francisco as recently as 2017. Now apparently he's fallen off the top 30 list. His 2017 season and his 2018 seasons did not go particularly well for him. His OPS has been dropping. Basically, he's like a younger Hernán Pérez. He's a utility guy. He's going to play short. He's going to play second. He can probably play third, too. He just hasn't been the star they were hoping he was going to be, or at least not, if not a star, a solid starter at the major league level. But, you know, if they can get him in and build him well, they can at least turn him into somebody who's going to be that backup behind the bigger players, behind Hiura, you know, Keston Hiura and Orlando Arcia, and he can be that guy behind them, getting just, you know, a couple of reps, you know, every couple of days, giving him days off, and being that sort of player. That's still worthwhile. And he's somebody who definitely was a major prospect in recent years, so there's still definitely the chance that they've seen something in him. And David Stearns has definitely been able to see a lot in a lot of different players and get something out of them. It is sad to see Kratz go, but he's the third catcher on this team at this point. With the signing of Yasmani Grandal, there wasn't another spot for him. He wasn't going to beat up Pena. And so he was going to be a third guy. He was going to go down, or he was just going to get cut. It seemed pretty likely he was just going to be off the team and searching again for a new team. The Brewers were able to get something for him, though, and pick up, you know, possibly at least somebody who can provide them something possibly in the next couple of years. And if not, they basically traded away a guy who they're almost certainly going to cut. In other additions, other than Hinojosa, they did add right-handed pitcher Alex Wilson, formerly of Detroit. He had a very good year last year, being a relief pitcher, getting another relief arm in there. And one of the reasons they have to do that is it looks like Corey Knebel and Jeremy Jeffress are injured and likely going to start the regular season on injured reserve list or on the disabled list. So with those sorts of injuries and the problems they're having, they're trying to find other pitchers to get in there. Apparently, they're still openly talking with Craig Kimbrel, trying to get another guy in there. Now, if Kimbrel can come in, have a couple good games, and get them over this first part of the season, and then we can have Knebel and Kimbrel and Jeffress and, you know, just lining up that back half, and we can get like through three innings with that every couple games, we can also save their arms because we'll have several other guys in there. I still have Matt Albers in there, too, as somebody who can step in and give them some innings. So that should all still be pretty decently set in the bullpen there. They're starting off the season March 28th, like I said, and it should be interesting. They're going to go with a lot of the younger pitchers. They're going to Corbin Burns. They're going to have Yoli Chosin. They're going to have Guerra and all of them there. And it looks like Chase Anderson's going to be starting out of the bullpen for beginning of the season. Davies is going to be one of the starting pitchers as well in there. And then hopefully by June or so, we should be able to start seeing Jimmy Nelson come up. And that should be also something good to get another arm in there who's hopefully ready by that point. And he's looked good in the spring training. He's looked good. He's looked ready. So it'll be good to see if they can get something out of him and really get the season going. I'm very excited to get started with baseball, and we'll see if we can find some other baseball people to come in and give us a little bit more depth on the Brewers as we get started here. But like I said, we also are going to have Packer Draft Talk to get to, so we're going to get through a couple of these different things and probably have to try to line up some different stuff as we go here. So, by the time we talk, we will have real, actual Major League Baseball to talk about. So I'm very excited, and opening day is always just an incredibly wonderful thing. It's just a beautiful pageantry, and it's just incredible to see that and to have that feeling of it, because regardless of how much baseball just does not on a day-to-day capture the imagination of America as it used to, opening day is still a magical thing where you want to sit there and fathers and sons and fathers and daughters and mothers and daughters and sons and everybody, you sit there with your children and you enjoy this pastime that has existed in this country for so long and that you shared with your parents, that for me, I continue to share with my parents and my children. And it's just something that everybody has passed on from family to family all the way down through the ages. And it's just, it is so great to be caught up in the history of that moment, that you are there for something that you are going to be talking about, that your children will remember and talk about for the rest of their lives. So, very excited to see baseball starting, and we will talk more about that once we have real games next week. Now, though, we're going to talk about something a little more painful, and we're going to do our are a requiem for a Badger season and a requiem for a Golden Eagle season. Like last week, I told you. I mean, I hope you listened before you filled out your brackets. I told you Marquette was not going to win this game. Murray State was a bad draw. It was a bad draw for the Golden Eagles. First off, Marquette should not have been a 5 seed. Anybody looking at the way they finished that season could have just said, you know, this is not a 5 seed. They're not a top 25 team by the time they finish that season. That being said, they just did not have the athleticism to keep up with Ja Morant. They tried to limit his pure scoring ability. I mean, like I told you last week, this is a guy who's averaging almost 25 points a game. He's right there in terms of scoring ability. He's right there with Marcus Howard. He's a guy who's getting about 25 points a game, somewhere in that area. The problem is he just was too much of everything. He had 16 assists. I mean, they limited him to 17 points, but he gave up 16 assists, had 11 rebounds, gets a triple-double. The last time I saw Marquette and a triple-double was Dwayne Wade. So this one went the other way. Ja Morant, that guy, he's an amazing player, and it's tough when you go up against somebody that versatile, that capable. He can make big shots. He made them when they counted. When they really needed him to get a lift, he got him something, and you had to collapse on him, and he had 16 assists. Tevin Brown and KJ Williams ended up being the major beneficiaries of that. Brown had 19 points. KJ Williams had 16. Now, Marcus Howard did have 26 points, led the entire game. He was ahead of everybody on both teams. But the next best, I think, was Sam Hauser was 16. Sam Hauser was the only other player in double digits for the Golden Eagles in this game. So he had 16. That means that there were two other players, Ja Morant and Tevin Brown, both outscored him. KJ Williams scored just as much as him. Theo John and Sakar Anim, they both had 0 points. You had two starters who entered the game with 0 points. Marcus Howard ended up with 26, but he was 9 of 27 for shooting from the floor. The team ended up shooting 32.4% as a team and 25.8% from three. You just can't win games doing that. They did not have the play that they needed. They needed volume from Marcus Howard, and they knew that. So they got the volume in points, but it came at the cost of so many possessions that ended up with nothing. And they didn't get anything from anybody else. And he scored, but he did not make that team. He did not carry them over anything. So Ja Morant was by far the best player on that floor that day. And that was a terrible draw for the Golden Eagles. They're a decent team. They definitely looked early on like they could be an Elite Eight type team, and they just teams figured them out or something. So that'll be interesting to see going forward what's going to happen with that team. I still think that Wojo's got a very good system of recruiting. He's getting a lot of good athletes. He's running a sort of set that draws in people like that, that are going to be more interested in getting up and down the floor and getting points. And, I think he's going to be in good shape for years to come. So I think that's still a good program there. They just had a very bad day and a bad month, really. It ended poorly as people started figuring out what they had. UW did not do any favors either. So they played against Oregon, who, I'll tell you, I underestimated Oregon. I thought the Pac-12 this year was not good. They were not good, but Oregon found a way to be the hottest team in basketball at the right time, tore themselves through 8 straight wins, won the Pac-12, which was really the only way they were going to get into the NCAA tournament. They needed to win out, and then they did that, and they came in and they played Wisconsin, again, in the South region, in San Jose, California, which is, you know, I don't think that that's a home court advantage of any sort, but it's closer. But it was 25-25 at half. And if you looked at 25-25 at half, you said they were going to lose. The Badgers have not been good in close games. They're one of the worst shooting teams in those close games. That was pointed out early on during the pregame broadcast, that if it was going to be a close game, the Badgers are one of the worst in the country in close games. This was a close game at half. And they got outscored 47-29 in the second half alone. It's almost unbelievable how poorly they were able to do in that half. They could not shoot. The Badgers were 30 shots from 3-point range. They made 6 of them. Now to contrast that, Oregon took half as many shots, 15, and they made 1 more. So they were 7 of 15, almost 50%, almost. And the Badgers went 6 of 30. You cannot have that many empty possessions. Several of those were not really empty possessions because, like, there was one towards the end when they were just chasing points. They shot three. They had one possession where they shot, I think, three different three-pointers. Trice and Davison combined for 2 of 17 from three-point range. Trice was 2 of 10, and Davison was 0 of 7. These are good players. They're good shooters, and they had nothing left by this game. They just didn't have anything left to really push out, and they couldn't make any of those points. They did get, in this game, 9 points from their bench, and they did play 5 deep some significant time getting players out there, but it's just kind of the way this team is built. The problem I have, and it's going back and forth on Twitter today quite a lot, not just today, but this week, there's a lot of immediate anger that guard has to go. And obviously those people have some points to make. I'm not going to just throw them completely out there like they're insane. The thing is, I don't like the idea of immediately wanting to fire anybody, especially coaches, and he's only been there 4 years. And the problem is that at 4 years, that's the point where you start seeing how do they do with their own players. And with his own players, I mean, he inherited a team that was a Sweet 16 team, and he took it to 2 more. But then he missed the tournament for the first time in quite a long time. I mean, this is a very significant stretch for the Badgers. They've been always a tournament team. And he had a team this year with an All-American, Ethan Happ. And, you know, they finished 4th in the Big Ten, and he has to be given credit for that. It's a good conference. 8 teams out of the Big Ten got into the NCAA tournament, and the other 7 all won their first-round games. The Badgers are the only ones to lose in that first round. It's a very good conference. It's a very difficult conference to win in, and the Badgers beat Michigan. They had some other great wins in there. They had some other tough losses. But they finished 4th in the Big Ten, and that means something. All right, it's not terrible. Then they won their first playoff game. They got into the final 4 teams in the Big Ten. So in the playoffs, then they lost to Michigan State, and that's kind of one you expected. So for the most part, they were around, if not slightly better than maybe you thought, especially coming off of a year where they didn't make the tournament. They got a couple sophomores at guard. They had a senior All-American, and you thought maybe they could get some things going here. But the problem I see, and not to say that I want guard gone or anything like that, but I need to see from guard that the players are making better improvements year to year. It's not just recruiting players. It's making them better and finding out the way to make the system work for them. Bo Ryan definitely came in and had a system in mind that he'd been working on for a long time at UW-Platteville. And he put that system into place. But the thing is not just that he went out and got talent, but he knew exactly what he was looking for. He knew exactly what he was looking for in players. He wanted tall guys, but he needed his tall guys to shoot. When he was able to get Decker to stay, but he was able to get Kaminsky, who turned into something amazing at this school, it's mostly because he was able to not just get people to come in, but he knew exactly the people who were going to match what he did, and he brought in the right players to do the things he needed done. I don't know if guard knows what he needs out of players yet, and I don't see him, at this point, turning them into something better than what they walked in as. Happ has been great this whole time. Happ has been a great player for 4 years at UW, and he was wonderful, but he never got better at free throws. He never got better at those things. And I haven't seen anything much from Trice or Davison this leading me to believe that they're going to become real point guards. We have a bunch of guys who can shoot, and the problem is that they can all go cold at the same time, too. The Badgers don't have a legitimate, real point guard. Like, when you think about the way that Koenig or Finley or any of those other guys who've been through UW over the last several years, or the last decade or so, decade and a half, the point guards that the Badgers had great handle. They were able to create their own shot. Bronson Koenig could make his shot. He could dribble you into giving him the space he needed to be open. He could come off a dribble. He could come off the drive. He could come anywhere and make his shot work. Trice doesn't make his shot work. Trice is a catch-and-shoot kind of guy. He's open or he's not, and he's going to make the shot most of the time, a lot of the time. He's a very good shooter. He just wasn't good in this game. Nobody was good in this game, and a lot of these, it wasn't necessarily Oregon's defense on the three-point line, because they were collapsing on Happ. Their game plan was to beat Happ and let the Badgers shoot, because there were a lot of open threes that the Badgers just missed. They just missed them, and they couldn't get that done. And so Oregon had a game plan, and they stuck to it. It was that Happ wouldn't beat them, and he didn't. And nobody else on that team stepped up to change that. So that's the way that the Badger season ends, in a rather disappointing 18-point loss to a team that barely belonged in the tournament just a week ago. We'll see where the Badgers end up next year, how they're able to improve this team, how the players are going to get better, who's going to step up and be those guys to see what they're going to be like here, and what else they can get out of those players. But I need to see Guard actually start turning these players into something better than what they were when they walked in the door. So now that I have my little diatribe, my little rant kind of out of the way for the Badgers here, let's talk about the Bucks. Something that'll make us a little happier here, get us back into the spirit here. Now, since we last talked, the Bucks got to play the Lakers, and then they also had two games against the Cavaliers, which oddly they split. So that was frustrating, but they did get another win against the Heat. So they took out a couple, and the big problem is they had a game against Cleveland, and they had to go into Cleveland with several people not playing. Ilyasova got the start, had Middleton, Lopez, Bledsoe, and then Snell is playing for Brogdon, who, like we mentioned last week, is just out. Antetokounmpo said that he did not play. He had some right ankle soreness, so... yeah, they had a lot of problems. Middleton and Bledsoe each put up, 26 and 24 respectively. Lopez gave them 19. They did score 102 points, but they gave up 107. Now, 107 is not terrible. That's okay in the NBA. That's something you can win with pretty easily most of the time, but not if you're only getting 102. And this is a team that routinely gets 120. They're the highest scoring team out there at this point. But yeah, 102 on an injured team, just dealing with two of its regular starters not playing on the road, and ended up getting a 5-point loss there. Of course, you know that Aaron is very excited whenever the Bucks can beat the Lakers, because he has no love loss for the Lakers. And watching them fail coming down the stretch is definitely something that you know he's excited for. I am still obviously struggling at this without Aaron. He's our general NBA professional here. But the Lakers, 31-40 at this point, or at least at the point after they played the Bucks here. That's a sad team, and it just there's nothing there that they could do that was just going to get them past the Bucks, especially not at Fiserv. Bucks got a big win against the Heat. Just an embarrassing loss for the Heat. 116-87. Yeah, just a crazy sort of game where that kind of score. Antetokounmpo gets 27, it looks like. And they just nothing going for the Heat in this one. They had, four of the starters in double digits, along with Whiteside also and Dwayne Wade. But yeah, the Bucks just 27 from Antetokounmpo, 18 from Middleton, 10 from Lopez, 10 from Snell, 11 from Wilson, 13 from Ilyasova. Just a good game all around. A lot of players playing very well. Shot 50% from 3, 17 of 34 from 3-point in that game. While the Heat just shot 29.7, 11 of 37 from 3. And Bucks held them to 37.6% shooting altogether, field goal percentage. So yeah, if you can hold a team like that and just keep them from getting anywhere, I mean, 87 points, that's a ridiculous NBA score, I guess. To hold them down that much and just pin them back and just keep them from getting through, that's a great win for the Bucks. I guess a team who's hanging around in that eighth spot, that might be somebody they meet in that first round. And this is what you can see, even without Brogdon, playing the Heat in that first series, which takes forever in the NBA, the Bucks should still be fine, at least until they get to the round of four in the conference semifinals. And then that's when the challenges start more. Bucks got a very quick turnaround for Sunday to go back out and beat the Cavaliers 127-105, a game in which my parents, Andy and Laura Barnett, were at, and enjoyed themselves immensely. I believe it's the first time they've been to a Bucks game together, at least. I still haven't gone to one yet, but that's the only of the major sports I haven't gotten to go see, college or pro. So, yeah, so my parents had a great time out there, spent the night in Milwaukee, and so we had some representation at that game, at least, and it turned out very well for us. Bucks get to have... coming up here tomorrow, or today if you're listening on Tuesday, the 26th, they will get to play the Rockets, the 47-27 Rockets, one of the four remaining winning records on the Bucks' remaining schedule here. So should end up very quickly here. They got the Rockets, followed by Clippers on the 28th, and then on the 31st, they'll be playing the Hawks in Atlanta. They should win that one. But back-to-back here, home games, Rockets and Clippers, and hopefully they can get those. If they can put those feathers in their cap at this point in the season and walk away with this, that could kind of wrap up the East at this point. As things sit, Toronto had a rough loss, fell another game back of the Bucks. They had the last second shot against the Hornets. It was like a lost ball that turned into a half court shot, 3-pointer to win the game by one. Toronto now 4 games back, Philadelphia 8 games back. Indiana, they have now clinched. They're going to the playoffs. They are 10 games back of the Bucks. They've played, what, do the math on this, but they only have a couple games left. I think they have 8 games left at this point. So winding down the season, Bucks magic number getting smaller and smaller as they get get a little closer here to the end of the game. They're still the best point differential in the league. They're 9.4 plus 9.4 here. To give you an idea here, even Golden State is only plus 5.6. Denver is a plus 4.6. Toronto plus 5.3. So the Bucks are on a 2-game winning streak at this point. Toronto's lost 2 in a row. Philadelphia has lost 2 in a row. Getting a chance to pull a little bit clear here. And hopefully they can wrap up this regular season conference championship and then start moving into getting ready for the playoffs. Just we need several more weeks to get Brogdon ready for that second round where they'll be playing somebody in that top four. The Indiana Pacers probably is that team at this point. Could be the Sixers even, though. So those are teams that are going to have to watch. The Sixers definitely had a great game against the Bucks just last week, I guess. But yeah, they're looking to start off with probably, again, Detroit, Miami, or Orlando. And based on the way that they handle Miami this year, Miami is kind of the team I'd like to see. Orlando's giving them some fits, so I don't know if that's really how I'd like to go. I'd rather almost see them play Miami than Orlando at this point. And it's all very close down there. They're all about a game and a half apart, it looks like, between Orlando and Detroit, the 7-9 seed. Just a couple weeks left here in the regular season, and then the Bucks can start on the playoff run. And my general feeling, the NBA doesn't seem to really get going until the second round of the playoffs. The first round, especially in the East, where there really are only 4 teams or 3 teams even that you're really looking at. Because the Celtics are falling apart. I don't know that I put Indiana in really that level where they're going to push people around just yet or really make some noise in the playoffs. But the Sixers and the Raptors are definitely, that could be a great second round series to watch. And it'd be great for them to beat each other up and come in tired to play the Bucks. So that's what we're still hoping for here. So with all of our major things covered, with all the major sports done, we've gotten pro, we've gotten some college, we've gotten football and basketball and all that done, we're going to go into some rapid fire stuff here. It'll be faster now too without Aaron here, I guess, but we'll move through the next part here with what we call the tail.
Rapid fire time now with the tail, covering Wisconsin's other sporting events.
Okay, and in the tail this week, this is a national championship level tail. All right, everybody, here's what we're going to talk about here. We got a bunch of college things that are wrapping up their seasons, and we have some national champions. The first and biggest one, the first and biggest, most impressive one, the UW women's hockey team. They had a ridiculous run. This team was ranked number one through most of the year. If you've been listening to us, you know they've been ranked number one almost the entire season, other than Minnesota passing once or twice. They beat Syracuse, I believe, 2-0 in the playoff to get into the Frozen Four. Then in the Frozen Four, they played number 4, Clarkson. Now, if you remember us talking about it, Clarkson had the number 1 goal scorer who had 40, the number 2 goal scorer who had 30. The only two players in the country who had 30 or more goals both play for Clarkson. They also had the number 3 goal scorer in the country. And those three accounted for being 3 of the top 5 scorers in the country. If you remember, hockey scoring means assists or goals. So the most points scored with those three players were 3 of the top 5. However, like we talked about, and like we mentioned on ScottyJohnny.com, the goal scoring was still, as a team, though, much closer. They didn't have as much depth to their roster as what the Badger hockey team had. And the Badgers had several different scorers, including Britta Curl and Annie Pankowski, who both netted over 20 during the course of the season, and were both top, I believe, in the top 10 or so, top 13 at least, in goal scoring on the year. And Britta Curl being a freshman, Annie Pankowski being the senior captain of the team, and probably just the best women's hockey player of the season. She was amazing this year, and she definitely led this team just through this playoff. She was in just massively involved in everything, just a ball of energy out there. She was incredible to watch. And yeah, I watched this. It was on Big Ten Network. If you didn't get the chance to see it, hopefully you can see if you can find that somewhere else. But they were great games. They were rough games. They were tough games, and they were fought hard. Against Clarkson, the Badgers won 5-0. Now, they got up 3-0. Annie Pankowski put them up with, I believe she had the third goal. Britta Curl had one. I think she fed Sam Kogan. But they had a couple different ones there, and then they got an empty netter from Annie Pankowski on a great little pass and kind of a 2-on-1 against the open net. So, I mean, no goalie, but a 2-on-1. And that made it 4-0, and they put the goalie back in. At that point, I mean, it doesn't matter how much you lose by if you're playing the national semifinal. I don't even know why you bother putting the goalie back in. So they did, though, and the Badgers got another 2-on-1. And put it up top shelf. I can't recall off the top of my head who scored that goal. It was a great pass and a great cross ice pass. Got the goalie moving side to side and got the puck lifted. Great goal. 5-0 win over Clarkson. Just an incredible game there. Then they got Minnesota. This is the matchup everybody's been waiting for. And we told you all year this was our prediction for the women's national final. Minnesota's played great all season. They've been a wonderful team. They're a very well-rounded team. Badgers went in there in Connecticut. They're playing in Connecticut. And they beat Minnesota 2-0. And they had control of that game throughout. They were the better team all the way through. Beat this team, this same Gopher team in the WCHA championship. They beat them in the national championship. After, you know, splitting with them in Minnesota, the Badgers just wire to wire, they were the best team. They just were. And it was incredible to watch this team. In the three national championship level games, they played, you know, Syracuse, followed by Clarkson, followed by Minnesota. They didn't give up a goal. Campbell played just amazing hockey. And not just her. The defense on this team played incredibly well. They kept the puck away. There were no rebound chances. They blocked a lot of shots. They had, I believe, in the semifinal, they had like a 17-shot shutout. In the final, I believe it was a 14-shot shutout. She didn't face a ton of shots. She blocked them all and handled the rebounds and took care of it well. But the defense did great to get the puck cleared. There were no rebounds. There were no sloppy goals. There was nothing left hanging out there for another player to put in. Incredible hockey. Incredible hockey. Congratulations to the University of Wisconsin Badgers women's hockey team. They were incredible all year, and you should be watching them. The championship... bringing them back into Madison, the championship celebration had to be moved from the Le Bon Arena to the Kohl Center because there were too many people going to be coming, and it was going to be just a major event, and it's wonderful. It's the first championship since 2011, and just an incredible year for this team, incredible year for Mark Johnson, the coach, to have his number retired and then to win a national title on one of the best teams I've ever seen. So congratulations to the UW women on a wonderful season. Sticking with hockey, the University of Stevens Point, University of Wisconsin Stevens Point, pardon me, got a 3-2 overtime win against Norwich, which is in Vermont. It's the Norwich Cadets came in. The entire Frozen Four was played at KB Willett Arena in Stevens Point. Stevens Point beat up a first-round opponent, Hobart, on way to playing what everybody thought was going to be the matchup would have been SUNY Geneseo, State University of New York Geneseo. They were the number two ranked team basically the entire season. The team they beat in their own conference final, SUNY Oswego, was the top four team as well. And so they ended up being one of the at-large bids into this tournament too. So Oswego was one of those teams that everybody was looking for to get in and maybe make some more noise. Norwich went in there and beat Geneseo at KB Willett Arena. They're calling it the Madhouse on Minnesota because it's on Minnesota Avenue. Right across from the house I grew up in, actually. And they came in great. They were having a lot of fun. My parents ran into some of the Norwich people just out for dinner the other week, too. So a lot of fun. Great to have them here. But, yeah, the Stevens Point Pointers went into overtime If you follow me on Twitter, like I said, at jbarn54, they've got a video of the goal, the final goal from behind the net where it was scored. Great off the to the goalie's left, you know, to his glove side, came high, put it in just right from around the faceoff circle. Got it lifted, got a great shot in overtime, ended it. They take home their sixth national championship for the Pointers. They become just the best team that the Pointers have. And I've watched a lot of D3 hockey. This was the best team I've ever seen. The passing was insanely good. It was crisp. It was accurate. They were able to just move up and down the ice. They turned from defense to offense very quickly. Their transitions were incredible. The goaltending was amazing. Rickman was named as an All-American. So was Cardi. And of course, head coach is named head coach of the year in the NCAA. They finished as an undefeated national champion. They went 20-0-2, I believe, was the final. Undefeated national champion. Just the best team in the country by far. They faced everyone they faced and didn't lose. Didn't lose a game. The best D3 hockey team I've ever watched play. And congratulations to the UW-Stevens Point men's hockey team for an incredible season. It was a wonderful ride. Thank you for having us along. Moving quickly to other national champions, Beata Nelson took home three separate national championships in swimming. She was named the Big Ten Swimmer of the Year. She was also the NCAA Swimmer of the Championships with three national titles. She won the 200 backstroke. She won the 100 backstroke and the 200-yard medley, individual medley. She's a junior. She's looking at going on to a couple other professional meets possibly this year. I don't know if she's going to be done now and just start focusing on professional swimming and getting ready for the Olympics. But three national championships in a single meet is an incredible feat. Congratulations to her. Again, Beata Nelson, a great, great season. Best swimmer in the Big Ten and the best swimmer at the national championships this year. So another great feather in the cap of UW Athletics. There were a couple other individual champions that were named over the last couple weeks. Morgan McDonald, he was named the Men's Indoor Track Athlete of the Year for the Big Ten. He was a unanimous decision. He was the national champion in the 5K and the 3K. He's also the reigning cross-country national champion. That puts him in a pretty rare spot for distance runners. And I can't remember, I was reading the thing on this week. I think he's one of like five players ever to be, or runners, you know, ever to be in that category. To have the 3K, the 5K, and the cross-country national championships all at once. So he was named the Big Ten Men's Unanimous Track Athlete of the Year for indoor track. Outdoor season will be starting here shortly. There's also, Alicia Monson. Monson was the women's indoor track athlete of the year in the Big Ten. She was the 5K champion and also had a top 10 finish in the 3K. So she's also another national champion for this Wisconsin team this year. Just another great season. A lot of great champions in the state of Wisconsin. And Wisconsin sports, in the Olympic sports, in the you know, hockey and the women's sports, in the D3 level, several national championships this year. It's been a wonderful year to be following Wisconsin sports top to bottom, all levels here, even when the Badgers make you frustrated. Remember, the Pointers were national champs. UW-Oshkosh Titans were national champs. We've got several national champions in Wisconsin here, and it's been wonderful to watch. So now we're going to get everything started, finished off here, I guess. Get everything closed off with my last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings, because it's time for the last call.
So without Aaron to kind of wrap everything up here nicely for me with maybe some incoherent statements, maybe some just kind of carrying on a little bit, the couple things I wanted to go over were there was the apology this week by Bob Kraft. And again, it was sorry if I've offended anybody. At one point, he said something about that he understands he's held to a higher standard. He's not being held to any higher standard, like not soliciting prostitutes who are being held as human captives is not a higher standard. That is just human decency. That's not a higher standard. We're asking you to not be just an incredibly terrible person. And I understand he's saying he had no idea they were human trafficking. I want to be clear to people, when you're going to the states where it's not some sort of, you know, like in Las Vegas, I guess it's okay. It's legalized and whatnot. In almost every other place, it's not. And you should assume there's some kind of human trafficking involved, because when there's that much money in an illegal enterprise, there's human trafficking. There's going to be something like that. And it happens all the time. The number of times I've been involved in criminal prosecution or criminal defense cases where the case had something to do with just something else entirely, and you just stumble into human trafficking things, is frustrating and terrifying, because sometimes you can't really prove it, but you know it's there, and you're seeing it in all these different places and these different websites, and it's something that is pervasive, much more so than people know about. Now, the place where he was going to definitely was involved in some human trafficking, it looked like, and that's why they were investigating it. The actual soliciting a prostitute, I believe, is just a misdemeanor, but what these women are going through is a terrible thing. And Bob Kraft's apology that he's being held to some higher standard and he understands it is ridiculous. He's being held to the same standard as anyone else. It is just, don't be that person. There's no reason for it. He's just being held to the same standard as the rest of us, in this regard, at least. And the NFL conduct policy generally does apply to the owners, so there's a hopeful chance that we'll at least see some sort of meaningful reaction here. If the NFL in any way wants to say that it has to take this seriously, there needs to be a response, but they will most likely just hopefully see it go away, because they're just going to hope that nobody's going to think about it once they actually start playing games. The other thing I want to talk about is there's been some discussion about the recent NCAA ad that came out during March Madness showing day in the life of a student athlete. And of course, it's not realistic. This guy is just walking around. He's playing in the quad or whatever he's doing and goofing around. And as a ton of NFL and NBA players are pointing out, they're like, this doesn't look anything like what I had to do. It's just working all day, trying to do my homework, just surrounded by all these other things. And it's just so much harder for them. And you're like, and it is. It's a difficult thing to do. And maybe there's not necessarily clear or easy answers to it, but it's something that needs to be talked about, at least openly. But the thing I also want to talk about is, when you think about paying athletes and you think about how much we need to pay these big stars, so that Zion can make all his money now, and, you know, your hope is, of course, that he's just going to stay at your university, or a player like him is going to stay at your university longer, which is why you want to pay them. But remember that all those D3 athletes we just talked about. Remember all these women athletes I just talked about. Remember, you know, Morgan McDonald, who's a man who's running indoor track and is the best at what he does. Or Alicia Monson, who is the best at what she does. Or the UW women's hockey team. Or any of these things. Beata Nelson. Remember all these people. And that they do the same thing. And that they work just as hard on the UWSP National Championship hockey team as they do on, you know, whoever's going to end up winning the Frozen Four this year in men's hockey, UND or St. Cloud or whoever's up there. And I've been following it a lot less without the Badgers involved. And remember that UW Oshkosh Titans are national champions in D3 men's basketball. And there will be crawling a national champion in men's basketball at the D1 level here shortly. But none of those players even get a scholarship, let alone any sort of payment for anything like that. And the schools still make a little bit on it, not a lot. But one of the biggest things is that those schools take that money and they put it into buildings, and they put it into facilities, and they put it into, you know, like the Centennial Center at UW La Crosse, and like a classroom building and things like that, to try to help actually teach more students. The money that gets raised from a lot of these sports actually does go back into schools and does pay for building projects and things like that around here. But remember these D3 athletes and these women athletes, when you start talking about all those things, if you're going to be paying every men's basketball player in this country, you are going to be cutting athletics programs across the country. People like Morgan McDonald are playing on indoor track fields everywhere, and that sport doesn't bring in money. The football program just pays for that. And Wisconsin's lucky in that the hockey program goes along with the basketball program in football, so that Wisconsin has more than two actual programs that bring in money rather than just costing money. Most athletic programs at the university lose money for the university, but they're valuable and they have important things to teach people, and they do provide scholarships to help athletes go on and do other things with their careers from there on out. As much as Morgan McDonald is an incredible athlete and might be able to go on and make some money running, because definitely there are people who do that. And as much as any of these other people who have the chance to go on and make some money, there's any number of people on that track team who will never make anything from track, and they will have the chance to get a scholarship. And the minute that you start saying that we have to take that money and instead start paying these athletes, we are going to be cutting these people from our schools. We are going to be removing them from our programs. We are going to be getting them out of our colleges and taking away opportunity from a lot of other people here who are working just as hard and giving up just as much too. Now, there's probably some other answer, and it's probably far more nuanced than what we're talking about here, but it's important that these women athletes get to keep staying there. And remember that these D3 players who are playing for no scholarship, they're working just as hard too, and nobody cares, because you're not gambling on whether or not UW Oshkosh won that championship. All right, so that's what we got for this week, and hopefully we'll have Aaron back next week. He had some house guests, like I said, come in a little more unexpected than what we were thinking, but hopefully we'll have him back next week. We've got a couple people who are lining up, trying to get ready for the draft to talk to and get us all set to at least get a couple more names for you to be familiar with as we're getting ready for the draft. Not just first-round people, but trying to get you a little deeper into the draft and get ready for what we're going to be seeing day two and day three of that NFL draft, because I'll tell you, I'm getting very excited. We have actual baseball coming, and we have an NFL draft coming, and this is going to be amazing, and I am pumped, and I'm ready to go here. So until next week, I am Jonathan Barnett, Scani Johnny, as we say. Check out our website, scannyjohnny.com. You can check me out also on Twitter, at jbarn, J-B-A-R-N, 5-4, the number 5 and the number 4. You can follow Aaron Flottam at Cheddar Talk, and you can follow this show at Scani Johnny number 1. Johnny, it's Scani Johnny 1. It's the number 1, not written out, but the number 1. And now, if you do want to send us anything, instead of sending it to where we usually had it, you can send it to podcast@scannyjohnny.com. So until next week, or whenever you bring us back in again, remember that whether you are on the town or on the go, it is always on Wisconsin.